Investor Relations, and I'm joined today by Elon Musk, Vaibhav Taneja, and a number of other executives. Our Q2 results were announced at about 3 P.M. Central Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question and answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please use the raise hand button to join the question queue. Before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thanks, Travis. So we've had a very exciting quarter. We were able to successfully launch Robotaxi, so providing our first drives with no one in the driver's seat, with paying customers in Austin. And as some may have noted, we've already expanded our service area in Austin. It's bigger and longer, and it's gonna get even bigger and longer. We were expecting to really greatly increase the Austin service area to well in excess of what competitors are doing, and that's hopefully in a week or so, couple weeks?
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks or so. And then we're getting the regulatory permission to launch in the Bay Area, Nevada, Arizona, and a number of and Florida, and a number of other places. So as we get the approvals and we prove out safety, then we'll be launching autonomous ride-hailing in most of the country. And I think we'll probably have autonomous ride-hailing in probably half the population of the U.S. by the end of the year. That's at least our goal, subject to regulatory approvals. I think we'll technically be able to do it, so assuming we get regulatory approvals, it's probably addressing half the population of the U.S. by the end of the year. But we are being very cautious. We don't want to take any chances, and so we're gonna, yeah, go cautiously. But the service areas and the number of vehicles in operation will increase at a hyper-exponential rate. So, you know, some other notable things. Model Y in June became the best-selling car in Turkey, Netherlands, Switzerland, and Austria. It is, I believe, the best-selling car of any kind in the world still. And autonomy is a big factor there. So even with just supervised self-driving, it's a huge selling point. And it's worth noting that we do not actually yet have approval for supervised FSD in Europe. So our sales in Europe, we think, will improve significantly once we are able to give customers the same experience that they have in the U.S. This is, I think, a very important point to convey. And we've been working with our main country regulator, which is the Netherlands, and I think we're close to getting approval with Netherlands. Then it's got to go to the EU. It's quite a, you know, Kafka-esque. In fact, Kafka had no idea that something like the EU could exist. Beyond Kafka-esque challenges with bureaucracy, but we will get the approvals. And I think we'll get, you know, so people in Europe will have an experience similar to that of the U.S. in most of Europe, you know, this year, hopefully, at least partially, in this quarter. And then we also have some regulatory challenges in China, which we're hoping to unblock shortly, where we, because we also cannot provide supervised FSD in China currently, but we hope to unblock that soon. And that's also, that's another major. It really is the single biggest demand driver. And then within the U.S., as we are confident about safety in different geographic areas, we will loosen up on how much somebody has to be laser focused, have their eyes laser focused on the road. That's been a common complaint. In fact, it does create an odd safety issue where people will sometimes disengage autopilot, then do something, change the radio, or maybe look at the phone, drive with their knee, and then re-engage autopilot, which obviously is less safe than simply keeping autopilot on. So anyway, we're get that experience will improve in the next several weeks. The because of our focus on Austin with no one in the driver's seat, the production release of autopilot is actually several months behind what people experience on a robotaxi in Austin. So now we have the robotaxi in Austin launched. We'll be adding back those elements so that there will be a step change improvement in the autopilot experience for people outside of Austin. So this is really, as you can tell, this is very much sort of a autonomy is the story. Like we need the physical product, without which you cannot have autonomy. But once you have a physical product, you need the autonomy is what amplifies the value to stratospheric levels. We also launched the Tesla Dyna, which has been a huge hit. It actually got worldwide attention, which is unusual for a Dyna. Dynas don't typically get headline news around Earth. But this is a pretty special Dyna. And if you're in the LA area, it's worth visiting. It's sort of a shiny beacon of hope in an otherwise sort of bleak urban landscape, frankly. So it's really quite a lovely experience. Great job by the Tesla team there. On the full self-driving front, continue talking about that. We're continuing to make significant improvements just with the software. So we're expecting to increase the parameter count. Actually, at this point, I think we can probably 10x almost 10x the parameter. Roughly 10x the parameter count. So this is actually a very tricky thing to do, because as you increase the parameter count, you get choked on memory bandwidth. But we currently think we can 10x the parameter count from what people are currently experiencing. Not just a 4x, actually 10x increase in parameter count. So this. Still a lot of improvement on the existing hardware to happen. Energy is growing really well, despite headwinds from tariffs and spare supply chain challenges. The Megapack is expanding capacity quickly, and we have upgrades to the Megapack that will make it even better. And we had record Powerwall deployments again in Q2. So I think batteries are going to be a massive thing. The scale of battery demand is, I think, not that many people appreciate just how gigantic the scale of battery demand is. The way you think about it is that the U.S. sustained power output for the U.S. grid is around 1 terawatt, but average usage is less than 0.5 terawatt. If you add batteries to the mix, you can run the power plants 24/7 at full capacity, thus more than doubling the energy output per year of the United States just with batteries. But that's again, big deal. It's a really big deal. Optimus, So we're revolving Optimus design and really getting Optimus to the point where it is a phenomenal design. So we're an Optimus version 2 right now, sort of 2.5. Optimus 3 is it is an exquisite design, in my opinion, and will be an incredible, as I've said many times before, it predicted it will be the biggest product ever. It's a very hard problem to solve. You have to design every part of it from physics first principles. There's nothing that's off the shelf that actually works. So you've got to design every motor, gearbox, power electronics, control electronics, sensors, the mechanical elements. You've also got to train Optimus to use its limbs and its sensors with a neural net. But we'll be applying the same techniques that we've applied for our car, which is essentially a four-wheeled robot. And Optimus is a robot with arms and legs. So the same principles that apply to optimizing AI inference on the car apply to Optimus, because they're both really robots in different forms. And Tesla, it is important to note that Tesla is by far the best in the world at real-world AI. Like a clear proof point for that would be if you compare, say, Tesla to Waymo. Waymo's got, you know, the car is best tuned with God knows how many sensors. And yet, isn't Google good at AI? Yes, but they're not good at real-world AI. Thus far, Tesla is actually much better than Google by far, and much better than anyone at real-world AI. And by far, Tesla has the best inference efficiency. I think a key figure of merit for AI is, what is the intelligence per gigabyte? And people talk about parameters, blah, blah, blah. But I think we'll just stop talking about parameters and talk about gigabytes, because with the parameters, you can have 4-bit parameters, 8-bit parameters, 16-bit parameters. But the actual constraints in the hardware are how many gigabytes of RAM and how many gigabytes per second can you transfer from RAM. Therefore, it is not a parameter constraint. It is a byte constraint. Tesla has the highest intelligence density of any AI by far. And I have a lot of insight into this with XAI. XAI is, you know, Grok is the smartest AI overall, but it's Grok 4 is a giant beast. Sort of at the terabyte level. So it's kind of important to note, Tesla has the best intelligence density. Intelligence density will be a very big deal in the future. It is now. So with Optimus 3, which is really the right design, it's like it doesn't have, at this point, there's no significant flaws with the Optimus 3 design. But we are going to retool a bunch of things, so it's going to probably be prototypes of Optimus 3 end of this year, and then scale production next year. I'm going to try to scale Optimus production as fast as it's humanly possible to do so, and try to get to 1 million units a year as quickly as possible. Do you think we can get there in less than 5 years? That's my sort of, I guess. That's a reasonable aspiration, is 1 million units a year. 5 years. That seems like an achievable target. So in conclusion, so far 2025 has been a very exciting year. A lot of major milestones. We've made clear demonstrable progress in autonomy that a lot of naysayers said we would not achieve. But it's worth noting that we have done what we said we were going to do. Doesn't mean we're always on time, but we get it done. And our naysayers are sitting there with egg on their face. So great progress by the Tesla team. I do think if Tesla continues to execute well with vehicle autonomy and humanoid robot autonomy, it will be the most valuable company in the world. It's a lot of execution between here and there. It doesn't just happen. But provided we execute very well, I think Tesla has a shot at being the most valuable company in the world. Anyway, obviously I'm extremely optimistic about the future of the company. Best way to predict the future is to make it happen, and we're making it happen here with the Tesla team. So I'd just like to say thanks to all of our supporters, and I think we've got an incredibly exciting future.
Great. Thank you very much, Elon. And Vaibhav has opening remarks as well.
Thanks, Travis. As Elon mentioned, Q2 was an interesting quarter in a few respects. We started ramping up the production of the new Model Y at all our factories. We rolled out our robotaxi service in Austin and delivered a car completely autonomously directly from the factory to the customer's home. It is a seminal point to get to this thing. I mean, it took a lot of effort, and I really want to thank everybody at Tesla to make this happen. It wasn't an easy thing to do, but we did it. It took time, but we've just begun the next phase for the company. The One Big Bill has a lot of changes that would affect our business in the near term. The first among those changes is the repeal of the IRA EV credit of $7,500 by the end of this quarter. Given the abrupt change, we have limited supply of vehicles in the US this quarter, as we are already within lead times to order parts to build cars. We've rolled out all our planned incentives already, and we'll start paying them back as we start to sell. If you're in the US and looking to buy a car, place your order now, as we may not be able to guarantee delivery for orders placed in the later part of August and beyond. The bill also made changes to certain emission standards by reducing the amount of penalty to zero. This in turn will have an impact on the new sales of regulatory credits to other OEMs, and in turn will lead to lower revenues. While we've never planned our business around such sales, it will nonetheless impact our total revenues going forward. On the automotive product portfolio, the entire lineup is updated. Globally, we're seeing an increase in the number of test drives. We started the production of the lower cost model as planned in the first half of 2025. However, given our focus on building and delivering as many vehicles as possible in the US before the EV credit expires, and the additional complexity of ramping a new product, the ramp will happen next quarter, slower than initially expected. One thing which is grossly underappreciated, and Elon talked about it, is that all our vehicles in the lineup are capable of autonomy. This is by far the biggest differentiator between us and the competition. Our vehicles top safety standard as is, but with FSD, they are and will continue to set a new standard for safety within vehicular transportation. We published our vehicle safety report earlier today, and you can see a car on FSD is 10x safer than a car not on FSD. We've started seeing an uptick in FSD adoption in North America in recent months, which is a very promising trend. And just to give you perspective, you know, since the launch of, since we moved to version 12 of FSD, we've seen the adoption rates really increase. We've started seeing on the automotive revenue front, despite reduction in regulatory credit revenue, and the total automotive revenue increased by 19% sequentially, even though total deliveries only improved 14%. This was primarily due to an improved ASPs because of the new Model Y. This helped in improving margin sequentially as well, along with improved mix and higher fixed cost absorption, despite an increase in costs from tariffs. We started seeing the impact of tariffs in our P&L. Sequentially, the cost of tariffs increased around $300 million, with approximately two-thirds of that impact in automotive and rest in energy. However, given the latency in manufacturing and sales, the full impacts will come through in the following quarters, and so costs will increase in the near term. While we are doing our best to manage these impacts, we are in an unpredictable environment on the tariff front. The margins for the energy generation and storage businesses improved sequentially, while deployment reduced, primarily due to the ramp of Powerwall deployments at higher margins. We were able to achieve our highest gross profit for the business yet. Note that the overall deployments will continue to vary quarter to quarter. I think Elon covered this, that industrial storage will make a difference in this drive towards AI and data center growth. The energy requirements are increasing at a rapid scale as AI applications are very energy hungry. The quickest path to scale up energy is deploying storage. This is something that our customers have started realizing, and despite this business having the largest impacts from tariffs, we are seeing customers willing to accept some of the tariff impacts. The big bill has certain adverse impacts even for the energy business, most notably on the residential storage business due to the early expiration of consumer credits by the end of this year. The challenges of the storage business therefore remain both from the bill and from the tariffs, and we're doing our best to try and manage through this, but we will see shifts in demand and profitability. The margins for our service and other businesses improved sequentially, primarily due to higher profits from supercharging and improvement in insurance and service center profitability. Operating expenses also grew sequentially as we continued our investment in AI projects, including additional expenses related to employee-related costs, including higher stock-based compensation and depreciation for AI compute. Our operating expenses, especially R&D-related spend, will continue to grow. We believe even in the current environment, it is the right strategy to keep making investments in these areas to position us for the long term. Other income grew sequentially, primarily from the mark-to-market adjustment on Bitcoin holdings, which was $284 million gain in Q2, while being $125 million loss in Q1. Just want to remind people that this would keep creating volatility based on the Bitcoin pricing. While operating cash flows increased sequentially, so did our CapEx, resulting in $146 million of free cash flow. We continue to make investments in various aspects of manufacturing, like CyberCab, semi-lines, and other manufacturing spend, and the expansion of our AI initiatives. Our latest expectation for the year in terms of CapEx is in excess of $9 billion. To summarize, we have near-term challenges in our business due to the negative impacts of the bill and tariffs. However, the investments that we have made for AI, robotics, and our lead in energy sets us up for a bright future. I would like to thank the whole Tesla team, our customers, our investors, and supporters for their continued belief in us.
Great. Thank you very much, Vaibhav. So now we're going to move on to Say.com questions. The first question is, can you give us some insight how robotaxis have been performing so far and what rate you expect to expand in terms of vehicles, geofence, cities, and supervisors?
Yeah, the robotaxi has been doing great so far in Austin. Customers really love the experience. It's super smooth, very safe, and just a great experience overall. And we already did a first wave of expansion in Austin, and we'll continue to expand in Austin to probably more than 10x our current operating region. We're also testing in a lot of other cities, as Elon mentioned. The next thing to expand would be in the San Francisco Bay Area. We are working with the government to get approval here, and in the meanwhile, launch the service with the person in the driver's seat just to expedite and while we wait for regulatory approval. We're also testing a lot of other cities in the U.S., including Florida, Nevada, et cetera.
Great. Thank you very much, Ashok. The next question is, what are the key technical and regulatory hurdles still remaining for unsupervised FSD to be available for personal use? Can you provide a timeline?
We're certainly getting there. I think it'll be available for unsupervised personal use by the end of this year in certain geographies. We're just being very careful about it, so.
This is not something which we want to rush.
No.
We want to make sure that everything is safe before we make it available broadly.
Yeah, we're just being extremely paranoid.
Yes.
I'm confident that by the end of this year, within a number of cities in the U.S., it'll be available to end users.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, the same AI hardware in the Austin robotaxi vehicles has some customer vehicles.
Right.
We did deliver a car autonomously from the factory to a customer this quarter.
Yes.
Every Tesla manufactured in the U.S. and in Europe autonomously drives itself from the end of line to the loading docks. It's just a software upgrade away.
Yeah. I think we'll end up delivering cars in the greater Austin area and the Bay Area by default from the factory by the end of this year. Like, a car will deliver itself to where you are, unless you say you don't want that.
That'd be super cool.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, guys. The next question is, what specific factory tasks is Optimus currently performing, and what is the expected timeline for scaling production to enable external sales? How does Tesla envision Optimus contributing to revenue the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah. So the Optimus 3 design, as I mentioned earlier, is, I think, finally the right design. There'll be further optimizations, but there are no fundamental changes to that are needed for the Optimus 3 design. It has all the degrees of freedom that you really want or need. So it's, we'll have prototypes of that in, I don't know, 3 or 3 months, and then start tooling up production. We'll certainly start production on that in the beginning of next year. The production ramp is difficult. It's always difficult to predict the S-curve of your production ramp when something has got an entire, when everything is new, because the rate of production will move as fast as the least lucky and least competent element of the entire supply chain, as well as in internal processes. So the more new stuff that is in a product, the slower the ramp could be because of unexpected supply chain interruptions or mistakes made internally. It's much easier to predict sort of the end of the S-curve or late in the S-curve than the beginning of the S-curve. And the beginning of the S-curve of the production ramp is, in any case, not really material for revenue purposes. The beginning of the S-curve, you're always negative gross margin, and you're debugging a lot of issues. So that's why, like, I feel like fairly confident in predicting things, or at least medium confident in predicting where we are in 5 years, but it's hard to predict where we are in a year or 2 years. So that's why I think 5 years, I think we could be at the, let me put this way, I'd be surprised if at the end of 5 years, 60 months from now, if we are not roughly making 100,000 Optimus robots a month in 60 months, I would be shocked.
All right. Thank you very much. Next question is, can you provide an update on the development and production timeline for Tesla's more affordable models? How will these models balance cost reduction, profitability, and what impact do you expect on demand in the current economic climate?
Well, I think Vaibhav did a good job of answering this question in his opening remarks. As we said, we started production in June, and we're ramping quality builds and things around the quarter. And given that we started in North America and that our goal is to maximize production with the IRA cliff ending Q3, we're going to keep pushing hard on our current models to avoid complexity. Then, fortunately, when that rolls away, we'll be ready with the new more affordable models available for everyone in Q4. And you know, the goal of those products was not to negatively impact revenue or gross margin, but just to make a car that everyone loves and wants at a more affordable price.
Great. Thank you, Lars. The next question is, can you talk about the benefits of Tesla investing in xAI?
This is not the forum to discuss this topic. I mean, if there is something which we need to discuss, we'll discuss it separately.
I think obviously, you know, we're a publicly traded company. Shareholders are welcome to put forward any shareholder proposals that they'd like. I've recently encouraged that. And then have shareholders vote, and we'll act in accordance with the shareholder wishes.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question is, can you tell us a little bit more about what goes on in the Tesla design studio?
Do you want me to take that one? We kind of generally say that what happens in the studio stays in the studio, and that, you know, earnings calls are not the place to disclose new product stuff. But we're, you know, working to make sure that we have an exciting future for Tesla and in the product lineup.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things happening in the design studio. It's not like static. And really, what's going to happen over the next several years is a fundamental transformation of the company from a pre-autonomy world to a post-autonomy. I'm working on a new master plan to articulate that Tesla team. And you know, there will be you know, some teething pains as you transition from pre-autonomy to a post-autonomy world. But I think the future vision for Tesla is incredibly exciting, and will profoundly change the world in a good way. This may sound like sort of pipe or whatever, but I think if we execute on that plan effectively, which is, you have to actually do that, Tesla will be the most valuable company in the world by far.
Great, thank you. The next question is actually a duplicate on unsupervised FSD for customer vehicles, so we'll skip that. After that is, are there any news for Hardware 3 users getting retrofits or upgrades? Will they get Hardware 4 or some future version of Hardware 5?
I mean, what we want to do is we want to get unsupervised done on Hardware 4 first. Once it's done, then we will go back and look at what we need to do with the Hardware 3 cars. I mean, like I said, the focus is first to get unsupervised out, and then we'll go back and see what more work we need to do.
Yeah. Great. The next question is, can you give an update on Dojo, and could xAI be a customer for Dojo?
Dojo 2, we expect to have Dojo 2 operating at scale sometime next year, with scale being somewhere around 100K H100 equivalents. And then AI5, which is really, it's spectacular too. I don't use those words lightly, it's spectacular too. The AI5 chip will be hopefully be in volume production around the end of next year. But that has a lot of potential. I think, you know, thinking about Dojo 3 and the AI6 inference chip, it seems like intuitively we want to try to find convergence there, where it's basically the same chip. That is used, where you say two of them in a car or an Optimus, and maybe a larger number on a board, like kind of 512 on a board or something like that, if you want high bandwidth communication between the chips at a force serving, doing it burn serving. That sort of seems like intuitively the sensible way to go.
Great. The next sub questions have all actually been covered. So we'll end with How will the BBB elimination of tax credits for solar projects affect your sales pipeline for Megapack?
Yeah, our sales pipeline is quite diversified across customers and market segments. So we aren't heavily weighted in Megapack projects that are paired with solar. And as we talked about in the opening remarks, we're seeing storage quickly being recognized for its ability to unlock grid efficiency and how quickly it can be deployed to help the grid. Additionally, although the recent bill was not favorable towards solar, we believe solar projects will still get built because the energy is necessary, the projects are well developed, and they're ready for execution. And there's really no alternatives in the near term given gas turbine lead time and pricing. We also continue to see growth in the data center segment and in standalone storage projects providing capacity to the grid in several markets across the U.S. Overall, we're forecasting a very strong second half of the year as we increase deployments. And lastly, we continue to invest heavily in U.S. manufacturing to mitigate policy and tariff impacts, expecting our first LFP cell manufacturing facility to be online by the end of the year and launching our third megafactory near Houston in 2026.
Great. Thank you, Mike. We will now be moving to analyst questions. The first question comes from Emmanuel Rosner at Wolfe Research. Emmanuel, please feel free to unmute yourself whenever you're ready.
Great. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Thanks. So, Ilan, are you able to share any KPIs with us in terms of the robotaxi business? How many vehicles are you operating, miles driven autonomously, or the number of safety critical intervention? Just curious, you know, how the rollout is, it generally is going, and any sort of like targets that you could share more broadly.
Sure, do you want
to? Yeah, we have, you know, more than 7,000 miles operating in Austin area. It's, you know, just because service is new, we have a handful of vehicles right now, but then we are trying to expand the service in terms of both the area and also the number of vehicles, both in Austin and other locations. So far, you know, there's like no notable safety critical incidents. There, you know, sometimes we have our own restrictions as to, for example, we restrict our speed limit to 40 miles per hour roads. And if the vehicle wants to go on like higher speed roads, we can stop the vehicle, but those are out of convenience as opposed to safety critical nature. So far, the service has been really well received, and we continue to expand on it.
Great. And that, yeah, longer term, from an economics point of view, longer term, you've previously talked about working to drive down the cost per mile on the robotaxis, maybe towards 30 or 40 cents per mile over time. Now that your service is live, how should we think about the main milestones to getting there?
Yeah, well, the cyber cab, which is really optimized for autonomy, that I think has got probably sub 30 cent per mile potential over time, maybe 25. You know, it's really, like if you design a car from scratch to be a cost optimized robotic taxi like CyberCab, you know, you like, for example, we're not trying to make it, you know, corner like incredibly well, like a Model 3 would, you know, or Model S or even Model Y. Like it's got all of our cars that are driven by people are super fun to drive. They've got incredible acceleration, you know, the incredible cornering capability. But we're confident that very few people in a CyberCab want to be hurtling around. So we've reduced the top end speed, which means we can use more efficient tires. We don't need as much acceleration. We don't need as much, big brakes to sort of, we want stopping distance, but we're not expecting it to be heavily used. It's a gentle ride. Essentially, if you design it for a gentle ride, and then you have a much more optimized design point. So that's why it seems probably we could achieve that. Especially if Optimus is, you know, serving, cleaning up the car and doing maintenance and stuff. And doing automatic charging. I think it's going to, the actual cost per mile of cyber cab will be very low. The cost per mile of our existing fleet will be higher, but still very competitive. So, maybe some number of 50 cents, I'm just guessing. So this really, Taylor's Road taxi fleet will go from tiny to gigantic in terms of operations in a pretty short period of time. Like, my guess is it has a material impact on our financials around the end of next year.
Great. Thank you very much. The next question comes from Adam at Morgan Stanley. Adam, please unmute yourself.
Great. Hello, everybody. So Elon, as Tesla moves into this next phase of physical AI, autonomous humanoids, robotaxis, et cetera, world-changing, civilizational species-changing technology with dual purpose, are you comfortable moving Tesla in this direction while only having a 13% stake in the economy? In the company? Is that sustainable, or do you still insist that something needs to happen given, your current lack of control and the types of technologies you're getting into?
Yeah, that is a major concern for me, as I've mentioned in the past, and I hope that is addressed at the upcoming shareholders meeting. It is a big deal. Like, I want to find that I've got so little control that I can easily be ousted by activist shareholders after having built, this army of humanoid robots. I think that, as I mentioned before, I think my control over Tesla should be enough to ensure that it goes in a good direction, but not so much control that I can't be thrown out if I go crazy.
Okay, Elon, you're not going to go crazy. We trust you. you can stay a little crazy. A little crazy is okay. Elon, though, we understand the board of directors of a major U.S. investment bank recently toured Optimus production. I don't know if you want to confirm that or not. It's just what we've heard. That's cool. When do you think others will be able to get a firsthand view of Optimus like that? And is the second half of this year too soon to have an AI day? Because it seems like everybody else in the world's doing it, and this talent war is getting freaking crazy. And I know you've mentioned for recruiting purposes, this is a very important thing that you've done. I think people have copied you on this, and I'm wondering if this year's too early for that. Thanks, Elon.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough thing, because when we're doing AI Day, we find that some of our competitors have literally done a frame by frame examination of our slides and everything we say, and then copy us. What's the trade-off? It does help with recruiting, but then competitors look very closely and copy us. That said, we should probably, I guess we could consider the shareholder meeting to be sort of we can maybe go into depth, some amount of depth at the annual shareholder meeting with respect to Optimus and AI and our chip stuff, perhaps. Tesla's also really underrated in terms of AI chip design, as well as AI software. There's still not a chip that we would that exists that we would prefer to put in our car. That is an AI chip that we would prefer to put in the car over our own. And even though it's been now out for several years, and we're confident that the AI5 chip will be a profound game changer. In fact, it's so powerful that we'll have to nerf it to some degree for markets outside of the U.S. because it flows way past the export restrictions. So unless the export restrictions change, we actually will have to nerf our AI5 ship, which is kind of weird. Hopefully we keep raising the bar on export restrictions, otherwise it gets a bit silly. We'll have a bunch of Optimus robots on stage at the shareholder meeting. The Optimus lab is cool to see. It basically looks like the set of Westworld. You could robots in various stages. Some of them are, in various stages of repair. Like, I don't know, some combination of like the Tatooine junkyard and Westworld is what it looks like. It's very cool. And Optimus is walking around the office here in Palo Alto. So just 24/7 is just walking around like a small. And we saw Optimus like, the Tesla diner serving popcorn. So we'll go from a world where robots are rare to where they're so common that you don't even look up.
Great, thank you so much. The next question comes from Edison at Deutsche Bank. Edison, please unmute yourself. Edison, please go ahead and unmute yourself. Right, while Edison figures that out, we will go to the next question, which is going to come from Dan Levi at Barclays. Dan, please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Great, thank you. Elon, you've talked about the opportunity to put non-Tesla-owned vehicles into the robotaxi network. Just talk about the gating factors to enabling that and what timeline we should expect on personally owned vehicles in the robotaxi network.
We haven't really thought hard about that. We need to make sure it works when the vehicles are fully under our control. It's kind of one step at a time here. We don't want to jump the gun. As I said, we're being paranoid about safety. So it's like, but I guess, next year is, I'd say confidently next year, I'm not sure when next year, but confidently next year, people would be able to add or subtract their car to the Tesla fleet.
I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that we will have some criteria, because like, even when you put your car in an Uber or Lyft fleet, they go through a whole checklist process of making sure things are working.
It's like an Airbnb or something.
Yes.
Like that,
yeah, so we will do something like that.
It's kind of bidding process.
Yes. Because we want, like Elon said, we want to be paranoid about security. I mean, long things like tread on the tire can have an impact on safety. So that's why we would want to do some proper validation before we let other cars come in.
Dan, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. Could you just unpack the different costs associated with scaling the robotaxi business and how you think about funding those costs? Are the cash flows in the auto business sufficient to fund it? And if not, what other funding sources do you think you'd use? You know, would you just fund it off the balance sheet?
Well, as soon as there is a clear cash flow stream associated with any product, you can debt finance it.
And in the interim?
In the interim, we will use our balance sheet, but like once we get to a certain scale in terms of recurring revenues, like Elon said, we could get into an easily a kind of transaction to try and get funding.
Great. Thanks so much. We will now move on to Mark from Goldman Sachs. Mark, please feel free to unmute yourself.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking the questions. With the FSD trials that Tesla has been offering to consumers and the attention on self-driving more generally, are you able to comment more specifically on what you're seeing with FSD subscription trends and take rates and help us better understand how large FSD revenue may be currently?
So we've definitely, like I mentioned it in my opening remarks, since we've launched version 12 of FSD in North America, we've definitely seen a marked improvement in the FSD adoption. And it's, the other thing which we had also done last year is we did bring down the pricing and we made subscription much more affordable. So we have seen, 25% increase since that time. So, which is an encouraging trend, but honestly, we've just started the story around explaining the benefits of FSD. Like I said before, we released our vehicle safety report. Even if you don't believe in this, anything else, a car on FSD being 10x safer should be a motivator. Plus the other thing is, people don't realize, even at $99 a month, it's like you're getting a personal chauffeur for almost $3.33 a day. And this is by far the biggest game changer, which I know we've been talking about it because part of it is we live and breathe it, but
yeah, I feel like... most people still don't know.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of people don't know it exists, and it's still like half of Tesla owners who could use it haven't tried it even once. They don't actually rely on it. Obviously, this is something we want to educate them on. So we've got to, when they come in for service, we'll reach out to them, send them like videos of how to make it work. It's such a shocking thing. They don't think a car is capable of this. So you have to show them and get them comfortable with turning it on and off. It's so trivial, but it's like saying you've got a cat that can sing a dance, but it just looks like a normal cat. And you're like, until you see the cat sing a dance and talk, you're like, you assume it's just a cat. That's Tesla FSD.
Yes.
Our car is intelligent.
And so what we're going to do, to Elon's point, like we've been giving people free time to try the FSD, but we'll start giving more prompts to say, okay, this particular drive, try FSD. So that, because it's literally seeing is believing. Like Elon said, think of it like a cat. It looks like a normal cat, but this cat can sing and dance.
Yeah.
Same thing on FSD.
Intelligent. Great, yeah. And the 25% comment was 25% increase in the penetration rate,
yes,
since we've seen the release of V12 and V13,
yes,
in North America. Great. Thank you. Mark, did you have a follow-up question?
Thanks, Travis. Tesla has historically said it would use pricing as one tool to help drive auto vehicle growth as long as free cash flow stayed positive, given the ability to monetize products like FSD. I'm curious how you're thinking about pricing from here as a potential tool to drive increased volumes, given where you stand with FSD, as well as the fact that the IRA purchase tax credits are poised to go away in the U.S. starting in the fourth quarter. So should we expect more meaningful price reductions given that monetization potential, or do you envision price reductions being more limited compared to cost downs given where free cash flow now stands? Thanks.
Well, we're in this like weird transition period where we'll lose a lot of incentives in the U.S. We still have incentives actually in many other parts of the world, but we'll lose them in the U.S. But we'll still be at the relatively early stages of autonomy. On the other hand, autonomy is most advanced and most available from a regulatory standpoint in the U.S. So, does that mean like we could have a few rough quarters? Yeah, we probably could have a few rough quarters. I'm not saying we will, but we could. Q4, Q1, maybe Q2. But once you get to autonomy at scale in the second half of next year, certainly by the end of next year, I think I would be surprised if Tesla's economics are not very compelling.
Great. The next question is going to come from Will from Truist. Will, please feel free to unmute yourself when you're ready.
Great. Thanks so much for taking my questions. I'd like to ask for a little bit more detail about the lower cost model that you talked about having, I think, started production in the first half, but you said we'll ramp later. at the last analyst day, as I recall, you talked about some aspects of this, like two-thirds or three-quarters reduction in silicon carbide and not using rare earths in the motor and perhaps other cost downs. You also had this unboxed architecture that I think you said would not be part of this sort of interim approach. Can you update us on what we should expect this thing to actually look like?
Well, we won't get into the looks because
what's the model Y? Leave the cat out of the bag there. Dancing cat that can sing and dance, but it can, it can talk and sing and dance, though. That's the cool part. I mean, the fundamentally the biggest obstacle remains that people just don't have enough. Some of the people don't. The desire to buy the car is very high. Just people don't have enough money in their bank account to buy it. Literally, that is the issue. Not a lack of desire, but a lack of ability. So the more affordable we can make the car, the better. I think it's going to be, it will be a very big deal when people can release their car to the fleet and have it earn money for them, which, like I said, I feel confident in saying that'll happen next year in the U.S. at least. And in the U.S., we're legally allowed, you know, appropriate disclaimers. And that'll make the affordability dramatically greater. Just like, you know, if you have an Airbnb and you can rent out your home when you're not there, or rent out a guest room or guest house or something like that, the affordability of your home is much greater.
Okay. Trying another topic then. Can, you know, we see all these wonderful developments at XAI like Grok, and, you know, obviously Tesla's trying to do quite a bit in AI. Elon, how do you manage the division of efforts and recruiting and talent and capital between these two that seem like there's a very high potential that they could in fact compete?
Well, they are doing different things here. You know, the XAI is doing like, you know, terabyte scale models and multi-terabyte scale models. You know, Tesla's 100 times smaller models. So one's real-world AI and one's kind of, artificial superintelligence type of thing. The genesis for XAI was that there were certain people who simply would not join Tesla, AI engineers, because they wanted to work on ASI, they would join Tesla. And I was like, well, maybe they'll join a new company. I think the Tesla problem is extremely important, but not everyone agrees with me on that. And so rather than have them join, you know, OpenAI or Google or some other company, it's like, as well have them create a company in that regard, which is XAI. So that's people can make a decision. Do they want to work on like super intelligence at data center or real world AI? It's kind of, they're both compelling problems, but some people want to work in one and some want to work on the other.
Great. And unfortunately, that is all the time we have today. Thank you, everyone, so much for your questions, and we will see you next quarter.
All right. Hey, everybody. Give me 1 second here. Pause that music there. Tesla wrapping up. And we'll just go through some takeaways. Let me know if the sound is working okay. Hopefully, looks like it should be. Make sure we got everything set up here. It looks like, I don't know, the stock I think was maybe slightly up, maybe slightly down. Prior to the call, looks like we're down about 4.5% now. Not sure if there was anything super in particular that caused that. It seemed like kind of a steady drop throughout the call. I don't know if it was one comment in particular. If anyone feels like it was, let me know. We'll look back through the notes as well. But I don't know. I didn't think it was a bad call by any means. I think there was a lot of exciting stuff in there. I think anytime there's sort of management acknowledgement that there could be some rough quarters in the future, that tends to make the market a little bit nervous. Usually company management, for like broadly speaking here, most companies, is going to paint things as like optimistically as possible. And not to say that Tesla's not trying to do that or not even unintentionally doing that themselves, but I also think Tesla is probably, some people will find this maybe ironic, but I do think Tesla is more direct about some of the negatives. Maybe not in every single situation, but situations like this where Elon is specifically saying like, oh, there might be some tough quarters here in Q4, Q1 in particular. I mean, we were talking about that earlier today, right? It shouldn't be surprising to anyone. That's very forecastable, especially when you understand the EV credit is going away. So I don't mind the acknowledgement of that. I think it's, you know, totally, again, something to be expected. But again, as we talked about earlier today, what's most important is making sure that the business is at a level that it can continue to support the investments that Tesla is making and what they want their future to be. That is what shareholders are owning the shares for, is that future potential of the business. And people that are good with that direction, I think there's a lot in this call to be excited about. And the less exciting parts of it, I think, are things that are pretty well known or pretty well understood in terms of just some of the challenges that Tesla is working through, as we're really in between growth phases and a transition phase right now, as Elon talked about. But on the sort of what Tesla is becoming side, I think there's a lot to be excited about. And I think Elon started off the call saying, you know, we're going to go back here and just go through some of the notes here. Just making sure again that the audio's good. Looks like it is. So yeah, expecting to greatly increase the sort of service area. I think it probably wrote surface on accident there, but service area to well in excess of what competitors are doing. We talked a little bit about that earlier today with Waymo quickly following up with Tesla's expansion. I talked a little bit about how maybe that's Waymo's expansion isn't quite as meaningful because they're also partnering with Uber. So they don't need to really make sure that that entire area is well covered because they have that fallback of Uber drivers to rely on. Versus Tesla, it's just, that's the robotaxi service area. If you are in one part of it and you call for the vehicle, it needs to come get you. It doesn't have a choice to send an Uber driver. So as Tesla expands that service area, I think that is extremely meaningful. Maybe not in this first iteration, but certainly I think at some point they mentioned here something to the degree of maybe like 10 times that service area is, I think that was more of like their ultimate goal. But just the fact that they anticipate this happening very quickly is important. I think Elon said in here, maybe even the next week or certainly in the next couple of weeks, let's see if I can find that note, that they would be expanding that service area in Austin. So I think that's encouraging. I think the portion of the discussion around the sort of focus of FSD really being on that service area in Austin and this robotaxi rollout and things like that, I think Tesla seems very happy with that performance. And I think, as they've said previously, the things that are driving that performance are not really making their way into the production software yet that people are able to use. Version 13.12.9, I think we're on right now. But once these things do make it into those vehicles, it should be hopefully quite another step forward, like we have seen really all of the last major releases from Tesla. I think version 11 to version 12 was a huge step change. I think version 12 to version 13 was a huge step change. And now we've been on version 13 for a long time, and there's good reason to believe, even if you set aside Robotaxi and what Tesla has accomplished there, I think there's good reason to believe, with the amount of time that Tesla has had and the amount of resources that Tesla has put forth here, I think there's good reason to believe that we'll see another major step forward with FSD, with whatever the next release is. And it's already so good that it's, I mean, Elon was saying months ago, and people would kind of like make fun of him for saying this, that it's like hard to tell which version is better because the interventions are becoming so rare. That is my lived experience with my vehicle. So when we start to talk about even taking steps forward from there, it's getting to the point where it's almost going to be difficult for customers to notice because it is so good. But Tesla at a high level has very good awareness of what that is going to look like when it's something that is deployed in vehicles that are driving a billion miles a quarter. Then you get very good data showing that improvement, and probably most importantly, getting to that point where, all right, these interventions are becoming so rare that we're comfortable with both, you know, a robotaxi initial launch here, and then expanding that in other areas, and then eventually, you know, just basically rolling it out to the entire fleet anywhere that regulators will allow it. And we're on that path, right? And there's a lot of positive signs pointing towards that path continuing. So that's sort of the biggest thing that I'm looking for in this call, because that's the future of Tesla. And I think there was many positives about that future that were covered on the call. Specifically here, this note that I've got up, the 10 times parameter count, I think is important. Tesla, with the version 13 software, they put that in an upcoming release, they would have 4 times the parameter count. So it sounds like not only are they confident in that, but they're confident that they can even continue to take that another step further, getting up to 10 times the parameter count with the current hardware. And then that's just the current hardware. Pretty quickly, we're going to be moving into AI 5 hardware, which has, I don't know, since I've been driving version 13, it's like, yep, this is amazing. I don't see any reason why another hardware iteration like couldn't pretty easily get this done with just the rate of progress that we've seen from Tesla and how much progress hardware 4 unlocked. And I think we're still in not maybe the early stages of hardware 4, but certainly not at the end point of progress for hardware 4 either. So yeah, I think the next 2 years are very exciting in terms of just what Tesla is able to do with autonomy. I think the last year has been very exciting with what Tesla's been able to do with autonomy. I think that's the reason that the stock is still around $1 trillion market cap, is because we have seen that progress. Even though, you know, it's been slow, it's been many years coming, it is happening, and it is going to continue happening, and probably in hindsight will seem like it happened pretty quickly here. That's sort of my expectation over the next 12 to 18 months. So from that perspective, which again, I think that's like, you know, Tesla shareholder perspective, maybe not traders, which that can influence the day-to-day movement a lot. But I think for long-term Tesla investors, there's a lot to be looking forward to and a lot of real tangible progress being made on those really important parts of the future of the business. But yeah, there might be a rough Q4 when that EV tax credit goes away. And hopefully that'll be stemmed a little bit by the launch of this more affordable model, which it sounds like Elon said looks like the Model Y, which is probably a good thing to just sort of like loosely let out there so people can align their expectations accordingly. I don't know, maybe that's part of the reaction here. I'd be a little bit surprised by that, but hopefully that is, and I think the timing of that will be well-timed with the EV tax credit going away. Hopefully that can sort of fill that gap. But it's going to put ASP pressure on, especially if it is something that is pretty similar to the Model Y. That's going to put pressure on actual Model Y sales, probably pretty significantly. So let's see. FSD being a huge selling point. These comments, I don't know that I fully agreed with or understood. Yes, I do think FSD is a huge selling point. It would be difficult for me to buy a non-Tesla vehicle because I would miss FSD extremely significantly. So for me, yes, it's a huge selling point, but also at the same time, like the take rate is low. So people are obviously buying Teslas for many other reasons. And I think there's tons of good reasons there as well. So they're acknowledging that it's a huge selling point. They're acknowledging that like not a lot of people fully understand it. It's like, man, let's just put these things together, right? And maybe do some advertising. I know it's Tesla's like hydrophobic to advertising. Replace hydro with whatever advertising would be in that vernacular, but it's it just seems like a pretty obvious solution, at least to try. Like, let's throw a Super Bowl ad on showing FSD, maybe. Just the risk is very low. It's like $5 million or something like that. I don't know. It's inconsequential to the scale of Tesla's business to try advertising in a more significant way, and I wish that they would just sort of like get over that hump. I mean, Starlink advertises, so maybe not in the most traditional ways. And I know Tesla's done like a little bit of it, but I would like to just see them try something more aggressive just to see what happens. I understand the hesitancy. It's sort of a slippery slope to hop on, but this seems like a perfect situation where, hey, there's low awareness and we have resources to be able to raise that awareness. Maybe we couple those things. All right. So anyway, I've talked about that many times. That's fine. All right. I feel like I'm getting off track on the notes here, but let's see. Yeah, so well in excess of what competitors are doing in terms of the service area, hopefully in a week or so. I think Ashok said a couple of weeks. So, you know, sometime this quarter, we should see another expansion again from Tesla. I hope that we'll continue to... I wish someone would ask about the safety rider specifically. The problem is that people ask like five questions. Whenever you ask multiple questions, Tesla doesn't answer them all. Like they're going to pick one, either the one that they want to answer, the one that they mind answering the least, or just the last one in the sequence. That's what's going to get answered. So people really just need to learn to ask one very specific question that they want the answer to. Like, can you tell us when the safety ride, like when the safety rider is going to be removed? Just do that and then ask your follow-up. I wish that that would have been the case, but I don't think that we have that answer yet. Tesla may not have that answer yet either, so it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I'm sure that they want to remove it as soon as they can. But it's more of a, like, does that actual decision really unlock anything for Tesla? Not really. It's more of a sign, an external sign that Tesla has achieved certain milestones. So it, you know, it'll happen when it happens, and I don't know that Tesla knows exactly when that will be at this moment. Good to see that they are having discussions, it sounds like, with the Bay Area, with Nevada, with Florida, with Arizona, sounds like other places as well. I think Elon said that they expect to be able to then launch Robotaxi before the end of the year, which is, you know, we're like 5 or 6 months now. That's not a lot of time to be potentially launching in maybe 5 or 6 different jurisdictions. So I think that's also extremely exciting, going back to just like things that are positive from this earnings call. I definitely count that in there. I think this is actually more optimistic than what we heard earlier this year, which is a pretty notable change. I think Tesla was originally indicating really just kind of Austin and Bay Area, and then like maybe some other locations. It sounds like now we're getting more specifics in terms of those, and seemingly some more optimism about the timeline, which is, both of those things are very encouraging as you get closer to that actual timeline coming to be current. So yeah, I think that's exciting. Probably half the US population by the end of the year. Like, that's not, I don't think that's the expectation. I don't think really anyone, even, I mean, the most bullish people probably expect like 100% worldwide coverage by the end of the year. But in terms of just like the spectrum of participants, I don't think there's many people that, and Tesla sets lofty goals, so this will probably happen later than what they are targeting. But even then, I don't think that people quite appreciate or realize or recognize that sort of scale and when Tesla is really targeting to be able to do that. I think it's easy to look at Austin and right now just kind of write it off of like, yeah, there's a safety rider, there's limited, like the public can't access it. There's a smaller, you know, small service area relative to half the US population. It's easy to diminish right now, but the ability to diminish it will be lost extremely quickly if Tesla scales anywhere close to what they are targeting, to what they expect. The ability to criticize it very, very, very quickly goes away. So that's, we're sort of right on the precipice of that, of whether that will happen or whether, you know, the doubters will be right. I think Elon sort of tends to live a little bit in the future. He's saying that the doubters just like have egg on their face. I don't think they feel that way necessarily yet, but I think if Tesla does what they are saying they're going to do here, then it's almost inarguable that that is sort of the outcome that we will be in shortly. And I think that's where Elon is sort of like already at, which again goes back to like his comments. Tesla's sort of already Tesla's sort of always 3 to 6 months ahead, just because they can see what's actually going on. They can see the data. They can see the simulations of the future versions of the software, and they've got that insight. Whereas we're just looking at, like, you know, oh, it's in Austin. We're looking at like 3 to 6 month old software. That's probably what's actually in production, even in Austin right now. So just trying to remind people to be mindful of that. And again, I think that's why, to me, like, this call, I think, felt pretty positive, is because I think Tesla is feeling very positive about where those developments are at. Yeah, Model Y stuff, FSD, Europe, I really hope figures that out. Less driver monitoring would be very nice. It is, I feel like they improved it, and then it just, I don't know if they got in trouble or whatever, but it seems to be back to being harsh again. Just looking through the notes, Tesla Diner. 10 times the parameter count, so we talked about that. Energy, a lot of bullish commentary there. It was nice to hear some of their, put that, some of that in context with the One Big Beautiful Bill and tariffs and things like that. I think they're expecting an impact, but sounds like maybe a little bit smaller than what people might have been fearing. So I think that's good. A lot of discussion on Optimus, so we'll look forward to seeing that version 3. Obviously, we've seen the version 3 hands, or maybe version like 2.5. We'll see if the version 3 ones are another iteration, but definitely looking forward to that. I liked how Elon put this in context in terms of just like the differences in AI. It's AI's, I don't know if it's like a catch-all right now, but it's a broad industry. There's a lot of elements to it, and I think it's difficult to find an argument against what Elon is saying here about Tesla being the leader in intelligence density, which is incredibly important when it comes to real-world AI. You can't take Colossus, you know, XAI's massive training data center. You can't take that and move it around. So it's just a very different problem. And obviously they work together in many ways, but there are certainly differences here too. Optimus production stuff. Q2 was an interesting quarter. So these are kind of CFO comments. Sounded like a 25% increase in FSD take rate since version 12. I don't know, that's probably a little bit lower than I would have expected, just because it has gotten so much better. But I do think that they were right to point out that people are not aware of how much better it is, whether within the Tesla customer set or certainly outside of the Tesla customer set. I think that awareness is low, so I think that's why the take rate, while it is nice to see that uptick for sure, and I also think they're talking about percents on percents here. So it's like, if it's 4% and it goes to 5%, that's like a 25% increase. I don't know. That's my understanding of how they're talking about it. I'd probably have to go back and listen, but I don't think it's going from like 10% to 35%, which would also be a 25% increase, but it's just how you're talking about it, how you're framing it. So I wish they would have been a little bit more clear on that, but my interpretation was more the former. The smaller increase. Auto revenue, we talked a little bit about that earlier today. Sounded like it was mainly just ASP driven, ASP was driven by mix, mostly with new Model Y. Cost of tariffs, I didn't quite fully catch. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult to hear exactly what they're saying. I do my best, but I didn't quite catch the cost of the tariffs stuff there. Something around $300 million was mentioned. Sounded like that's going to affect future quarters, possibly affected this quarter as well, but might need to go back to listen to that. We may get, probably not on the tariffs in the 10Q, but 10Q also usually gives some context on how the numbers have been affected, at least. Good points on energy from Elon. I think things that people here probably understand. just the energy demand is kind of insatiable and how batteries can very quickly help with that. I think the quickness part is important. If you fought anything with XAI, like, you understand how much of a challenge power is and energy is, and batteries are something that can aid with those challenges and be put into production, I guess, or become part of a project very quickly. R&D continued to grow, CapEx $9 billion this year, all things I'm in support of. I think there's a lot of exciting things for Tesla to be investing in that I think that they are investing in. Yeah, so here's that 10x comment. Will probably more than 10x the area, the service area in Austin. Next will be Bay Area. Sound like they'll launch the robo-taxi system with the driver first in the Bay Area, which I think that's what Waymo did too. And people kind of laugh at, like, oh, Tesla's just following the exact same thing as Waymo. First of all, no. Just because there are some similarities, it's not exactly the same. but secondly, even if they were following the exact same process, they're doing it with hardware that is very different. So even that criticism is sort of a faulty criticism. It's like, oh, you're doing the exact same thing 5 times cheaper? That's lame. But obviously that's extremely impressive. So that criticism always kind of cracks me up. Timeline for FSD unsupervised. It's just, like, not what they're working on. It is, but it's obviously the focus has been robotaxi in Austin. And as that gets working to a degree that Tesla's happy with expanding, then they can start expanding that focus to customer vehicles and things like that. More optimist stuff. I think things that Elon has talked about before. Nothing too crazy new there. Shareholder meeting stuff. We'll see optimists at the shareholder meeting. Tesla will talk about the progress there. Sounds like Elon's confident that there will be some sort of compensation vote or something at that meeting. Elon may have that master plan that he talked about, which obviously will include Optimus. I would expect that either before the meeting or at the meeting. So I think that would be, what, Master Plan 5? Maybe 4? So we'll look forward to that. Fundamental transition of the company. Dojo 2 and Dojo 3. Sorry, I just got an alert. AI6 with the sort of next chip from AI5, that continued iteration. Elon sees that converging with Dojo 2. I know Tesla's already used hardware 4, either in simulation or inference. Maybe in training, I would have to look back on that, but obviously if they're using AI 4 chips or hardware 4 chips that go in vehicles on sort of like the server level or the remote level, they're realizing that the value of those chips extends beyond just being specifically in the vehicle. So it's something that Elon's talked a little bit about before, like, can you leverage the compute capacity that is just going to be sitting idle in these vehicles? And probably the more convergence that there is between these designs, the better you could leverage that. So I don't know. It's sort of a fascinating little intersection that Elon is particularly well suited to navigate because of his experience both with Tesla, which is already covering a broad swath of AI, but then also obviously the history with OpenAI, and now, of course, with XAI. Elon, pretty uniquely positioned for making decisions like that and how to best dial in those levers to optimize in those areas. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. I think Adam Jonas asked about the AI day. That's a good question in that context of, we're probably not quite there yet for them to be able to talk about that stuff, but it is something that we'd love to hear more from Tesla about. because it's a really exciting time in terms of development in those areas. All right. Energy stuff. We know about the LFP. We know about the third megafactory. $0.30 per mile, guessing, for CyberCab. Tesla, I think, has talked about that before. Maybe $0.50 per mile for other vehicles. So compensation stuff, Optimus stuff. Confident AF5 chip will be a profound game changer. I think that's most of it. Yeah, I think we've touched on most of it. So, yeah, I guess just taking kind of a more high-level view on today. I think it was... sort of, like, excitingly unexciting. Like, I don't think that there were many things here that were surprising in a negative way. And I think the positives that we heard are thesis reinforcing. And what I mean by that is that at least my reason for holding Tesla is that autonomous robotics future, first through EVs and then obviously more recently with humanoid robots. And within that framework or within that thesis, I think Tesla is executing, and I think that they're giving a lot of reasons to be optimistic. I think that they're optimistic in a way that is more than just like putting on airs or trying to be optimistic for the sake of optimism. I think that they really are, and I think that they have good reason to be. So that was sort of what I was looking for coming in here, of just, you know, is Robotaxi on track? Is it going to continue to expand? Yes. Yes. Sounds like that's going to happen as soon as the next couple of weeks with potentially a much larger service area. I don't think Waymo is then going to be able to one-up that, you know, the following week after that. And this little battle that we've got going on with Waymo and with Tesla and scale, obviously Tesla's taking the later start here in terms of scale, but the real question is, what's the rate of progress from there? Elon has said hyper exponential. Obviously Elon has been wrong on timing before in these subjects, but if that happens, I think it doesn't take much of that happening for people to very quickly realize that this is like kind of game over situation. So we may not be far away from a realization like that. Maybe we are. It really just depends how things continue, but that's sort of what I'm watching for at the moment. And I think everything that they said was either in line or above my expectations in terms of how that progresses from here. So excitingly unexciting. And we'll see how things go. Like if we don't get another expansion and 2 weeks and we don't get another expansion in 4 weeks, then it starts to look disappointing. But if those things happen, then I think the reason for excitement remains, and we'll see. And then just in terms of like more of the negative stuff, it's, I don't know, none of that stuff was either unexpected, not to say that it like doesn't matter, but certainly I don't think that there was anything in here that was like an unexpected negative. Like, we know about tariffs. We know about the one big, beautiful bill. We know about these things. Obviously, there's going to be an impact. Tesla's going to have to work through those impacts, and that's going to maybe put some pressure on the business at certain times. But, like, the EV credit going away isn't very relevant for Tesla's future of being an autonomous, you know, rideshare provider. Like, it's just, those aren't even related at all. So it's... maybe not unimportant isn't the right word, but it's not the most important thing. All right, just going to take a quick look. Any questions in here? I did see a couple of super chats in here, so I wanted to thank you, Greg. That was a massive one. I appreciate that. It means a lot that, you know, you guys find this helpful, find my commentary something worth listening to. Even if it's not the smoothest presentation all of the time, but I do really appreciate it. It does mean a lot. ESR, thank you for that. So question here. Let's see. So does having a CEO that knowingly helped elect people involved with Epstein help or hurt the stock? I'm not sure. Curious about your analysis. So I assume this is tongue in cheek. You probably didn't expect me to take this question. But hey, I'll talk about it. So there was literally a report today that this is very political and probably not something I should wade into. But there was a report today that I think that the DOJ said that they informed Trump in May that as part of the Epstein files. And I think that was around the time where Elon said this. So the framing of your question wouldn't actually match with that report. Now, people are going to believe all sorts of different things on this, depending on your political lens. That's fine. I'm not really here to comment on that. So everyone's free to make their own opinions. Like, no one has to be a Tesla shareholder. It's done well historically. So if you don't want to be a Tesla shareholder, you certainly don't have to be. Francis, thank you. I appreciate that. Good to see you on here. Greg, I know I thanked you. And then there was one other one. I'm trying to like pull up the name here. I'm not sure. 40 Watt. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Okay. Well, I don't really want to end it on that note. Hopefully we can find another question here. Next question I saw was, why does the audio suck? I'm sorry if it did. I try to make sure that doesn't happen, but hopefully it was okay. Not your audio is Tesla's. Yeah, I wish they would make some better audio here for the earnings calls. It's like, I thought you guys are a technology company. It's almost like nostalgic now to have terrible audio on earnings calls. Please go back and share your thoughts on Hardware 3 FSD comments. I assume that's in reference to like what the upgrade path for Hardware 3 is. So yeah, it's a tricky topic, right? Because so far Hardware 3 probably hasn't delivered on what the expectations that Tesla set, at least, you know, in 2017. I think over time Tesla sort of walked back on what some of those expectations should be. So there's sort of like multiple, there's a spectrum of expectations around that hardware for people. So, and I experienced that. Like, I was a Hardware 3 owner for a long time, right? For like 4 years. I did the FSD transfer to a new vehicle. Obviously, there's additional expense with that, but it, you know, I didn't ever feel like it wasn't necessarily fair. My expectation going in was that this was something that would be being developed for a long time, that no one can know for sure if it's going to work or not. So maybe my expectations were like a little bit lower than the expectations that Tesla publicly set. So I recognize that. I empathize with that. I do think that over time Tesla's done a lot to try to make Hardware 3 work. I think that they're going to do what they can to make those customers eventually happy. But like, a car has a finite life, right? You can't just wait 20 years and be like, oh, we're going to upgrade your car. Oh, you don't have your car anymore? Like, yes, that solves the problem, but it's not like the best customer experience, obviously. So I do think that Tesla cares about it. I do think that they'll do what they can to make it right. But I also think that they absolutely have to make sure that they can get unsupervised FSD working. Like, that above anything else, even above making those customers like happy or feel whole or whatever, that needs to happen, partially even just because it's like life-saving technology, right? Like you're, if you're sitting there making that decision of like, oh, should we spend our time like upgrading people, spend our resources upgrading people to this hardware that isn't quite there yet? Or should we make sure that this hardware actually gets there, crosses the finish line, starts saving lives? Like, it's a pretty clear choice of pick the one that's going to save more lives. And that's just even setting aside the economics, which that's an even more clear picture of like, yeah, you got to solve FSD first. So it's completely rational. It's the decision that makes sense. It's the right decision. But recognizing that that decision causes frustration for a big portion of the customer set, which happens to be a very supportive group that was like early adopters and got Tesla to where they're at today. So it's a tricky problem. But I think that Tesla's answer is the correct one, even if that is, you know, frustrating. So it is good that I think, you know, I think it's something that absolutely should be happening, that FSD transfer is something that's being allowed, especially in markets where FSD hasn't really been available. Like, that's kind of a no-brainer that that should be the case. So I'm glad Tesla is offering that. I'm glad they're expanding the offering of that. And I think that over time, Tesla will do what they can to, you know, make it right with those customers. That's going to result in some people that had a bad experience, and that's it's unfortunate. I'm sure that's never been Tesla's intent and not their desired outcome, but you know, sometimes that is what happens when you're working on really difficult problems, and I'm not sure that there's a way around that other than just managing it better up front, which, you know, certainly a fair criticism, I suppose, but are you going to hate the company forever because of that? I mean, I'm not. Just my personal point of view on that. So, again, I think that Tesla cares about them, about those customers, and will do what they can to give as good of a resolution as possible in, on that situation. And Hardware 3, like, Hardware 3 is, it's gotten better. It's, it is still very good. It's, like, the, if Hardware 4 Teslas didn't exist, that would be the best sort of driver assistance technology that you could buy in a, in any car. Like, Hardware 3, which, what, that's 8 years old now? And it would still be the best. So, I think that's worth just keeping in mind. Like, it's not like Hardware 3 just sucks and is worse than everything else out there on the road. It's better. Way, way better than anything else out there on the road, except for Tesla's other product. So that's very important context, I think. All right. Well, I suppose that's not my favorite place to wrap it up either, but as good of any. Again, I think just overall today, like, probably pretty uneventful in terms of an earnings day. I don't think that we got anything like any major groundbreaking announcements or anything like that. That wasn't what I was expecting. I doubt many people were expecting that. The biggest thing to keep an eye on now is just what happens in Austin, what happens elsewhere with the Robotaxi rollout. And I think by the time that we talk again, which will be at the latest next quarter, we're going to see some pretty dramatic progress. So that'll be the next checkpoint, if nothing sooner. And looking forward to continuing the discussion then. All right. Thanks, everybody.